It's Wednesday, February 10th. It's not a good sign when your own defense lawyer says, shoot, that guy's opening argument was really good. We start here. If one team is winning, it's not Donald Trump's.
They did everything they could but to talk about the question at hand.
GOP senators don't sound impressed, but can Democrats actually change any minds? We'll break down day one of the former president's impeachment trial. Where do you go for help when someone opens fire in a medical center?
There was a complete scramble.
The bizarre mass shooting that has now turned fatal overnight. And they've been cut off because they're not vaccinated. Well, now they're vaccinated.
Families just have to wait.
So why are folks in nursing homes still being told you can't see your families? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. If I asked you, how much do you care about whether a former president is legally prevented from running for office ever again, you might give me an answer, one way or the other. But if I asked you, how much do you care about holding someone accountable who helped get people killed after setting loose a violent mob of supporters, that probably evokes a much stronger answer.
Good afternoon, as you see, we're coming on the air right now for the start of the second impeachment trial of former President Trump. There you see the House managers.
And that is really at the crux of what you're seeing in Washington this week, is defining what question is even being asked. Is it about a deadly attack set in motion by a strongman trying to topple democracy? Or is it a law school question about calendars?
No American president before Donald Trump has ever been impeached twice. No former president has ever been tried. So this is one more moment in history, all stemming from those unforgettable events of January 6th, the siege of the Capitol by supporters of Donald Trump. There you see.
Morning business is closed, and the Senate will convene as a court of impeachment.
So before we even get into the impeachment charge itself, the Senate decided to block off a full day to argue that more technical question, whether this trial should even be happening in the first place. But think about it. The prosecutors in this case, the Democratic House impeachment managers, they were able to decide, hey, we don't only need to talk about that question. We could start to prosecute the bigger question, the meatier question, right now. That's what they did. And in doing so, they seemed to rock everyone in the Senate chamber back a little, including the lawyers who were defending the former president. Let's break down day one of the impeachment trial of former President Donald J. Trump. ABC senior national correspondent Terry Moran was watching this all unfold. And Terry, as this historic trial gets underway, these impeachment managers from the House really seem to lay out their case in like this visceral way.
Visceral is the word, Brad. They brought people back, people in that room in particular, who were victims of that attack, and brought them back and silenced the room. 100 senators watching in dread, as we all did.
And we're going to the Capitol, and we're going to try and give our Republicans, the weak ones, because the strong ones don't need any of our help. We're going to try and give them the kind of pride and boldness that they need to take back our country.
Get the out of here, you
they had put together this video of the attack on the Capitol.
Everybody in! This way!
You fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Matched with Trump's own words.
Where the f- are they?
A timeline of this attack, which ended in bloodshed in the very building where they are.
That's what we need to have, 30,000 guns.
That's true.
And it was very dramatic, but also very effective because it was aimed beyond the Senate as well.
Storm your own Capitol buildings and take down every one of these people.
Yeah, the country moves on. We've got big problems to solve. But one of the things that video did, I think for any patriotic American, it fills you with a sense of horror and even shame about the fact that it happened. And that's what the Democrats want to bring the Senate and the country back to, the crime itself.
Senators, the president was impeached by the U.S. House of Representatives on January 13th for doing that. You ask what a high crime and misdemeanor is under our Constitution? That's a high crime and misdemeanor. If that's not an impeachable offense, then there is no such thing
And as far as the manager's argument is concerned, that video goes right to it. Jamie Raskin saying after it ended, if that's not impeachable, then nothing is.
President Trump may not know a lot about the framers, but they certainly knew a lot about him.
And he said just because it happened in January, at that fragile moment when the transfer of power is about to be accomplished, he said there can't be a January exception to impeachment.
These powers must apply even if the president commits his offenses in his final weeks in office. In fact, that's precisely when we need them the most, because that's when elections get attacked.
And the attack on the Capitol, which had just been shown once again to the senators, bringing them back to that horrible moment, that is the best argument against the notion that you can't try a president after he leaves office just because his crime happened just before that.
Okay, so that's the prosecution, so to speak. What was the president's defense? They seemed caught off guard in the beginning.
I'll be quite frank with you. We changed what we were going to do on account.
Well, they were. In fact, Bruce Castor, the president's lead defense lawyer, acknowledges, yeah, I had a different opening argument, but, you know, the House managers argued so well, I have to change it, which is not the thing you want your lawyer to say when they stand up in your defense. And he was clearly ill prepared.
I saw a headline, Representative so-and-so seeks to walk back comments about, I forget what it was, something that bothered her.
Castor's argument was really all over the map, though. He seemed to lose his way. At one point, he said, you know, he worked as a congressional aide. He said, yeah, I worked in this building 40 years ago. I got lost then. I still get lost. Well, he was lost out there.
You know, it's interesting because I don't want to steal the thunder from the other lawyers, but Nebraska, you're going to hear, is quite a judicial thinking place.
And he was talking about ancient Greece and Rome and, you know, all kinds of different things. And generally, that's a sign of someone that doesn't really have firm grip on the facts and the law.
And there are certainly others probably that are smaller countries that lasted for less time that I don't know about off the top of my head. But
I got to tell you, I covered criminal trials for a long time. And that was not the best presentation by Bruce Castor. But something did emerge from it, something clear. He said, if you go forward with this, was kind of a threat, there will be no end to impeachments.
When the pendulum swings, perhaps the next person that gets impeached and is sent here for you to consider is Eric Holder during Fast and Furious, the Attorney General of the United States, or any other person that the other party considers to be a political danger to them down the road because of
their... He even said Eric Holder, right. President Obama's attorney general, could be hauled in and impeached. Now, there's a big difference. President Trump was impeached while he was in office. But
right, like the actual impeachment, the House impeached him. That already happened.
Yes. This is the trial of the impeachment. There's two stages.
This is an untenable combination that literally puts the institution of the presidency directly at risk.
Now, David Schoen, you know, he was angry. It was the authentic Trumpy note in there, right? He was railing against the impeachment and the notion that Donald Trump could be put on trial.
Every civil officer who has served is at risk of impeachment if any given group elected to the House decides that what was thought to be important service to the country when they served now deserves to be canceled.
And he said, he warned that if this trial goes forward, we'll be, you know, there'll be something almost as bad as the Civil War.
I was perplexed by the first attorney who did not seem to make any arguments at all.
Rambled on and on and on. And didn't.
And at the end of the day, senators were not hugely impressed. I mean, they lost one vote.
President Trump's team were disorganized. They did everything they could but to talk about the question at hand.
Bill Cassidy, Republican senator from Louisiana, actually said, you know, he came in with an open mind and Trump's lawyers lost his vote.
Now, if I'm an impartial juror and one side's doing a great job and the other side's doing a terrible job on the issue at hand, as an impartial juror, I'm going to vote for the side that did the good job.
Right. They lost his vote as far as like the constitutionality. Like, should we actually have this trial? Is it constitutional? The answer, according to a majority of senators, was yes. So theoretically, that question is answered. The question now is, you know, is he guilty? They're going to start on that today. But Terry, if you're the Democratic House managers, like, what more is there to do? Like, you've already shown your big movie.
Yeah, that's a great point. That, look, the movie, as you pointed out, is so visceral. It takes you right back to that moment and infuriates your civic soul, if you've got any. The question is, can they tie it tightly to Donald Trump? And I think that's where their evidence really has to go, that to show step by step what he said, what he did, and what he didn't do.
Basically, he's telling the Capitol, telling people at the Capitol, what frankly was my message to him over an hour ago, which is tell them to get out.
This is where the choice not to call witnesses is important, because one of the most damning pieces of evidence might be, what did Donald Trump actually say when people said, you've got to say something, you've got to send assistance up there? And by all accounts, he did not. An eyewitness to that moment, I think, would be very powerful for them, but they don't want to open that Pandora's box, I guess.
Yeah, we've heard that House impeachment managers might want to call witnesses, but there's just so much political pressure from Democrats, from the Biden administration, just to please move on. Let's wrap this up, because to convict someone, you need 67 votes. That's 17 Republicans. So unless we see even bigger surprises, we're nowhere close to that number right now. Terry Moran in Washington. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, a shooting at a medical center was frightening enough, and then they found the bomb. We're back in a bit.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking in that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much up.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
The other thing to keep your eye on today is what new details we get from the town of Buffalo, Minnesota.
We move on to the other news this Tuesday evening, the shooting at a health clinic in Minnesota. Several shot, five people rushed to hospitals, a suspicious package.
Because yesterday morning, out of nowhere, police there began hearing about a mass shooting at a medical center. Let's go to ABC's Alex Perez, who's been covering this. Alex, can you walk us through this yesterday? Like, what do we know about what happened so far?
Well, Brad, still a lot of unanswered questions, but some terrifying, horrifying moments for people at this medical center in Buffalo, Minnesota.
At 10:54 a.m., we received a 911 call.
Yeah, you know, I assume there was some kind of a shooting, possibly, or a hostage situation. There was, you know, a lot of cops, and they were pulled right up to the door. And then the ambulance, I mean, there was probably four or five ambulances right away, and
It happened late in the morning. Authorities say this suspect, a 67-year-old, who they say they're familiar with, walked into this facility and opened fire.
I was just getting ready to drop her off at the door, and two of the nurses came running out to my vehicle and got in. They said they heard about 11 shots within a minute.
And I heard this man say, "Get down on the ground." And I turned and I saw the back of this man, and he had a gun.
Now, you can imagine medical centers, hospitals are always busy, always filled with people, employees, and also patients. So there was a complete scramble.
Some more shots in the back of the building. And then there was a young woman there with a baby.
Oh, no.
And another man, and they just ran out. But I was just kind of, I didn't know what to do.
People trying to get out of there, trying to get somewhere safe when all of this was going on.
During the secondary search, we also found a suspicious package in the corner of the lobby.
And so then to make matters worse, there was the scare of there being a possibly an explosive device there. Minneapolis Bomb Squad helped them defuse what they believed was an explosive device there. But just really some terrifying moments for people who were trying to do their job, trying to work at this medical center.
right? And originally, five people rushed to the hospital. One of them has now died overnight. This is a fatal shooting at this point. Alex, I mean, when I hear IEDs, like when I hear the guy's known to police, he's had incidents with this medical center before, that makes me wonder about planning, right? Do we have any idea about what his alleged motivations would have been?
So I will identify the suspect as Gregory Paul Ulrich.
You know, authorities wouldn't really get into specifics about his history, but they did say that he has a history of run-ins with law enforcement.
We have had several calls for service regarding Mr. Ulrich dating back to 2003.
And they believe he was specifically targeting this medical center or someone who worked there.
And there certainly is a history of him being unhappy with healthcare, with the healthcare that he received.
The only thing that sort of gives us a glimpse at what police are looking at is that they said they believe that he was unhappy for some reason with the type of care that he had received or was receiving. And they believe that somehow had something to do with what triggered him.
Right. And I was going to say, we're still getting information. I don't want to draw like larger meanings before we know more. But I guess like the first thing that goes through my mind, Alex, is just how scary it is that it would happen at a medical center where, you know, this year of all years, it's such a highly charged environment. You do have people who have questioned the medical establishment because of all these stressors on the system. We'll see what comes out later today. Alex Perez, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Do you think it's time for schools to reopen?
I think it's time for schools to reopen safely. Safely.
Later today, the CDC is expected to lay out new guidelines on how to safely reopen schools, which might seem kind of late, right? But schools are still confused over at what point are their teachers and students safe.
You have to have fewer people in the classroom. You have to have ventilation systems that have been reworked.
In fact, as the number of coronavirus cases seems to drop and the sliver of Americans vaccinated grows wider little by little, there is still a ton of confusion over when it is safe to open anything up. That includes people who have been more or less sealed off from the outside world for nearly a year now.
I really feel like I'm in jail, like I can't go anywhere, I can't do anything.
It's been lonely because I haven't been able to get out.
You can't see people, you can't see your family.
I'm talking about nursing homes. At many nursing homes, vaccine distribution is actually going all right. So, when do families finally get to see their loved ones? ABC's Laura Romero has been looking into this. Laura, can we just start with what has the last year been like for nursing home residents?
So COVID-19 began to sweep through the halls of long-term facilities across the nation very early on. And what we've seen is they've been completely devastated. Nursing and assisted living facilities have accounted for roughly 6% of the nation's COVID-19 infections, but close to 40% of all deaths. And now we are coming up on a year since families have had complete access to their loved ones.
Growing recognition of the toll inside nursing homes.
I got a phone call this morning that she passed at 3:30 in the morning.
We are strongly advising that nursing homes for the elderly suspend all medically unnecessary visits.
On March 12th, you know, facilities across the country closed their doors to visitors. And since then, families have had very limited access to their relatives.
We've decorated his window with lots of signs and family pictures, but I'm putting a new picture up today to surprise him.
And right now, each state has some form of visitation guidance, but really, they are leaving the level of access up to nursing home management.
I wish I could hug you.
And so right now, what we are seeing are families speaking out. They're filing lawsuits against nursing homes and other long-term care facilities because of continued strict visitation rules.
Wow. And so I guess I sympathize with families that are, you know, they're watching their relatives be vaccinated. They're like, I still can't see them. But why the sense of urgency, I guess, to file a lawsuit? Like, why can't a visit wait for another month if it's been 11 months already?
So for many families, it's not just about the weekly one-hour visit. Many family members of nursing home residents are what you call essential visitors.
So we just want to make sure that she's okay. And I'm going to bring her some clean clothes and hopefully we can get in.
So they're performing a lot of assisted daily living tasks that nurses and other staff members don't do. They perform special therapies.
On a kayak?
Yeah, that'd be good.
All right, grab your paddles. One, two,
They provide emotional support. So for them, it's much more than just a regular visit.
Well, we love you and we miss you.
Dad said you look good.
But all you really want is to be there for them and, you know, hopefully hold their hand and kiss them goodbye. And people aren't getting that.
I spoke to someone who is suing a nursing home in New York because the facility is only allowing her to visit her husband once per week. But because she is an essential care visitor, she was used to spending about 40 hours a week conducting neurotherapies, another assisted living task for her husband who suffers from a neurodegenerative disability. For her, you know, her husband needs her. You know, so it was just devastating to see a wife who is used to being there 40 hours a week and now being, you know, shut out from seeing her husband.
Right. And in that case that you talked about in New York, Laura, the nursing home has now told ABC News it's working out a plan with the wife. But, like, I guess the whole point is she's not that unique, right? Like, this happens. So why wouldn't you just let the families visit their loved ones now?
Well, remember, Brad, COVID vaccines, they're not 100% effective.
I feel a lot better that I have the vaccine in me, you know, but nobody really knows that much about COVID.
So just because residents receive the vaccine, that does not necessarily mean that they are out of the woods. They can still get the virus. And we know that both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine, they're only about 90% efficient. Mm. And, you know, there's also a good number of staff members who have not taken the vaccine, which means they could be exposed to the virus. And Walgreens recently announced that 60% of staff in nursing homes declined the vaccine. So right now, there are a lot of people in these facilities that are exposed to COVID-19.
Okay, so then what is the plan? Because I imagine we're not going to get up to, you know, 90% herd immunity anytime soon. You got assisted living facilities that are not necessarily getting the vaccine in the same priority groups as these nursing homes. So what happens between now and when everyone's vaccinated? Like, can people in these settings just not see their families at all?
Well, like I mentioned, you know, right now, each state has some form of guidance on visitation, but they are leaving it up to the facilities to decide how they want to open up, you know, their doors. And so families just have to wait. They have to wait for the facility to decide that it's time, you know, for them to come in to see their loved ones.
It was awful to see them look for their family. So we tried to come up with new ways. We tried to have visits outside their window. We did a lot of FaceTime, but nothing like that human interaction where you want to hug your loved one.
A lot of these families are also worried about the impact of extended isolation. And, you know, we have known for a long time that social isolation is associated with worse medical outcomes and particularly for senior citizens. And seniors who suffer from social isolation typically engage in lower levels of self-care. They're admitted to the hospital, you know, with higher frequency. So they're worried about what the isolation is doing to them.
Yeah, I think the challenging thing here over the next several months is going to be, you're vaccinated, now what? It does not necessarily mean that everyone around you is safe, or even that you are necessarily safe, considering, you know, 1 out of 20 people who have the vaccine still might be susceptible to COVID. The whole point of herd immunity is making it so there's not even that many places to get COVID if you are one of those vulnerable people. All right, Laura Romero, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Brad.
And one last thing.
Mr. Ponton, I believe you have a filter turned on in the video settings.
If you want to talk about great moments in lawyering, the legal drama in Washington yesterday had nothing on this.
Can you hear me, Judge?
I can hear you. I think it's a filter.
It is, and I don't know how to remove it. I've got my assistant here. She's trying to, but...
That is the sound of a cat lawyer. At least, that's what he looks like on screen.
I'm prepared to go forward with it. I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
I can see that.
If you haven't seen this, what are you doing with your life? But just to get you caught up, a lawyer has shown up to an online court proceeding on Zoom. He's on a secretary's computer. What he doesn't know is that the secretary's daughter used Zoom the night before and turned on a filter that makes you look like a really cute kitty cat. Hey, is that Rod?
That's me. I don't have a cat face on.
And so we called up the lawyer himself, Rod Ponton, in Presidio, Texas.
Well, the way it worked is before, you know, when you sign in, you're in the waiting room. You're waiting for the hearing to start.
Right.
And so my face was on my screen while I'm in the waiting room.
Your real face.
My real face. And then as soon as the case gets called and it goes to the hearing side of the screen, I disappear and I'm a cat.
Wait. And by the way, can I just point to one moment in this video where at one point I think you say, like, I'm prepared to go on. Like, were you thinking you would just continue this court hearing as a kitty cat?
All the parties know my voice. You know, if we couldn't fix the picture, at least we could have the hearing.
And in a world of trolling and hate watching, this video instantly became beloved. Like, in the span of a few hours, it had reached BBC Dad levels.
And what will it mean for the wider region? I think one of your children has just walked in. I mean,
because there's already something about watching a parent just trying to earnestly look professional.
What is this going to be for the region?
My apologies. No, sorry.
When you're reminded, oh yeah, like, people live real lives with real children when they're not here with me. And in this world, where we've all been thrown into new work environments, everyone can identify with this guy, assuring everyone he's real.
I'm here live, I'm not a cat.
And almost trying to convince himself that he's not lost.
I'm sort of glad that, you know, I gave the country a good laugh today. We needed a little bit of humor after the last year we've had.
We've got video of me interviewing cat lawyer. He was not able to turn himself into a cat again. He still doesn't know how to use filters. But if you want to see that is on Instagram this morning at Start Here ABC. By the way, more live coverage of the impeachment trial on abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.